Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 66 for June 1st, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Are we problem solvers or are we space creators? By Julian Langer. Most people, radicals, anarchists, or anyone else really, like to be problem solvers. Problem solving is generally thought of as a nice thing to do. We tend to like to think that there is a way that things should be, and that by making things like that, we are making things be the right way. Because people tend to approach situations in morally nice ways. This picture of the world fits a mathematical way of viewing the world. It is entirely logical that when I add the number 1 to the number 1, I get the number 2. There is a rule that I followed, and by following the rules, I arrived at the way things should be, which is basically the way civilization views the world. Mathematics is a world of problems with solutions. Mathematical problems have mathematical solutions, and the system runs smoothly from 1 to 2 to 3 to 5 to 8 to 13, and so on to infinity. This system builds things that work within its framework, and this works from simple problems all the way to more complex or chaotic ones. The role of mathematics and mathematical reasoning in our culture is one that is all-consuming in a godlike manner. From economics, socialist or capitalist, to the science of physics and engineering, the mathematical model of problem solution is totalizing and totalitarian. This approach to interacting with the world is one that is ultimately reductive, as mathematical approaches ultimately try to reduce the world to sets and variables that can be treated numerically. Take as an example the Marxist-type socialist approach to engaging with capitalism. This approach views wealth inequality, as in numerically unequal quantities of capital, as a problem that requires a solution. The problem is mathematical, as is the solution. The solution, or rather the solution they present, is that a collective mass of greater numerical quantity through revolutionary means or representative democracy take authority from the capitalists and redistribute the wealth in equal numerical value. Similarly, Ted Kaczynski's entire analytic and political theories approach is one of mathematical reduction. This makes sense given his background in mathematics, where he focused on boundaries within geometric functions, limiting the space of his discourse. For Kaczynski, challenging this culture is reduced to the revolutionary approach through a set of systems aimed at solving a set of problems. In this case, Kaczynski is approaching the problem of techno-industrial society from the same mathematical model of approaching the world that produced the society he hates. In the world of the academy, much of mainstream social sciences takes an entirely mathematically reductionist approach. In psychology, who someone is reduced to what can be verified under experimental research, outside of any situational context. In sociology, people are reduced to sets of groups that are easily categorized and scientifically manipulatable. History is the narrative of this culture reduced to particular accounts of particular events, encoded in number. The list goes on and on. This isn't by accident. This is done by design, in order to present information in a clear manner, in order to make problems easier to solve. Even the anarcho-primitivist approach to discourse, which openly criticizes mathematics, takes a reductionist mathematical approach, trying to reduce the conversation almost exclusively to anthropology. This is done because anthropology is a means of solving a certain set of problems that anarcho-primitivists want to solve. In this way, anarcho-primitivism looks to paint a totalitarian picture that reduces the conversation to their chosen content in order to solve the problems they view as problems. One of these issues within mathematics, one that is outlined by Wittgenstein, is that it is entirely an invention, a technology, that limits discussion to fictitious symbolism within a fictitious world of problems and solutions. Within the world of egoist discourse, these fictitious symbols are often called spooks, parodying Stirner's term. And this is largely what the drive for reductive clarity has led the discussion to, spooky problems with spooky solutions. The anarchy that I desire is something different, something far wilder. Wildness doesn't contain problems or solutions, but spaces being creative through destructive processes. Instead of mathematical reduction, I desire is complexification through hermeneutics and semiotics. While there is no system to this for someone to follow, certainly not one I'm willing to map out, this seems to me to be an approach of radically subject-sensitive interpretations and the search for eco-phenomenological embodied approaches to meaning-making. Instead of problem-solving, I desire the destruction of concepts and systems, and the subsequent creation of new ideas and spaces. Again, while I'm not going to try to invent a system for you to follow, this seems to me to be a process of deconstruction, of finding new spaces from the debris, of the articulating descriptions of these spaces using uninhibited vocabularies and lexicons. Instead of a clear cut that reduces old growth forests to logs to build houses, a solution to a problem within a particular fiction, I desire a forest undergoing processes of creative destruction. The clearest and simplest of spaces are devoid of life, and life is messy, complex, and not reducible to mathematical problems with subsequent solutions. This process of creating wild spaces is messy and difficult, where we are left with just being honest about our desires and our projects being driven by our desires rather than a system of cold, hard logic. But my anarchy feels drawn more towards this than the fictitious world of problems and solutions. We are left having to admit that there is no way things should be, like how mathematically, one added to one ought to bring us two.
What's your favorite number? What does it mean? Number one is the individual. Number two, duality. Number three, which numerology is all shit? Number four is the number that will run through this music. What's your favorite number? What does it mean? What's your favorite number? What does it mean? What's your favorite number?
What's new this week? Declaration of Scriptum Anent, accused at the hearing of May 31st. From Act for Freedom Now. A brief statement of solidarity. Quote, we are writing these few lines to reaffirm a few fundamental concepts regarding this trial and the court carrying it out. First of all, we reaffirm our closeness to the arrested comrades. For us, they are brothers, and the pride with which they are confronting this little theater makes us proud. We also reaffirm our attachment, stronger than ever, to the anarchist ideal and our hatred of the society that thrives on death and exploitation. We are anarchists. It is normal for the state to attack us. We do not expect anything else from you, and this is why your repression does not surprise us, except for its clumsiness. In fact, after a year and a half, you find us with the same positions of attack on the system. We are accused of terrorism, but we continue to point the finger at the state and its laws that you administer, that it legitimizes the exploitation, exclusion, and death of millions of people throughout the world every day to protect the interests of those who profit from all this. Unquote.
June 9th, 2018. Pacific Northwest-wide call to block Joey Gibson at Planned Parenthood, Kent, Washington. From Puget Sound Anarchists. Anarchists in various places are taking the energy of the anti-fascist fight and extending it, at least a little, to less linearly connected fights, like houseless encampments that are under attack, and as noted here, like attacks on women's access to healthcare. While there is an argument that this is opportunism that will have a short shelf life, at least if history is any gauge, it is our current version of a similar dynamic to the Occupies, i.e., how do anarchists stay in conversation with large, excited groups of people who probably disagree with us on some important things? That said, this call out implicitly, maybe explicitly, argues that anarchism is a tactic. Quote, Planned Parenthood has a policy in place for supporters to ignore protesters at their sites. As anarchists, we know this is impossible, and avoidance politics is a particular brand of leftist cowardice. This is a call to crew up, roll tight, and organize to obstruct yet another targeted attack by Joey Gibson and his rabble of misogynist frat boys, unquote, and implicitly equates anarchism and anti-fascism. Quote, if we are to continue to call ourselves anti-fascists, these kinds of gendered attacks must be met with the same force as a Nazi rally or a white power gathering, unquote. To which I say,
Hamilton, the tower is moving, a statement from North Shore Counter Info. The embattled Hamilton project is moving to an unnamed larger location. Quote, during this period, we received an eviction notice from the landlord at our current location. He was concerned about the far-right attacks on the space and wanted us out. We had put a lot of time and energy into improving and defending that space, and under no circumstances did we want to leave. We will never be intimidated or willingly pushed around by fascists. However, the situation was not just a matter of contending with the far-right, but also with the police and the realities of capitalism. Our landlord made the decision to evict us at the urging of the Hamilton police. They took the attacks on our space as an opportunity to reach out and strike fear into our landlord, telling him stories of Nazi threats against the tower, and suggesting that no one in the building, including the residential tenants above us, would be safe as long as we were there. They explained that although they were not investigating any of the threats further, and thus they were not taking them seriously, it would be best if the landlord took them seriously. We remain as committed and uncompromising as ever, and are looking forward to starting a new chapter of the project. Unquote.
Anarchists from Minsk support Sam Falder from Pramen, announcing a postcard in support of this anarchist prisoner in Britain, who has been sick with cancer for 2 years with no or at least bad health care from the prison. People can buy the postcards, and there is a mail address to send letters, cards, comics, etc. to Sam directly. Write a long-term anarchist prisoner today.
Review of May Made Me on 1968 France from Black Rose Federation. This is a sketch of a new book by Mitchell Abidor. The sketch gives a thumbnail presentation of the book's contents, apparently a Marxist analysis of May 68, which apparently failed because the students, quote, lacked the necessary strategy and organic connections to workers, unquote. Black Rose Federation is gonna Black Rose Federate.
Open letter from UCIL, Brian Valentino, from Void Network Indonesia. A short letter from someone arrested for May Day activities. Quote, as I wrote this letter, I've been arrested for 21 days in Mapolda DIY prison cell. I'm arrested for my involvement in May Day riot a few weeks before. There's some difficulties that I can't really explain here one by one, but I know for sure that these cells aim to limit our access to communicate and therefore are further acts for the network, acts that were meant to revive the spirit and consciousness to undermine every form of obedience and submission. I believe we've agreed that it is not intellectual or academic potential that could raise the consciousness of our surrounding that is rapidly destroyed. I wanted to give thanks to the comrades out there, those who keep their spirit high for rebellion and struggle, and also their solidarity, even the remote places. There's not much I can write in this letter, as the condition is quite impossible. But one of the main purposes of this open letter is to warn all the comrades that the situation has escalated, and it is urgent to act as more and more of our friends being arrested for participating in the May Day action. Unquote.
Ukraine. Anarchist cell sets fire to Alexis belonging to EPU vice chair from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, Sergei Grachev, a politician, a liberal, and just a scoundrel, to put it mildly. We dislike his way of life and his party. As anarchists, we stand on the positions of self-government and social equality. We do not divide politicians on the pro-government and the opposition. For us, they are all enemies and traitors. Each of them deserves absolutely fair hatred and retribution, unquote. The one comment on this thread is so odd, and yet not quite worth quoting. Just saying.
Graffiti raises speculation about anarchism from mainstream Hamilton Spectator. This thread has gotten a lot of play this week, perhaps predictably. It does mark a continuation of Hamilton's occasionally tacit equation of anarchism with hate groups. Quote, the incident, which has set off a chain of remarks on the social news aggregator Reddit and on other social media, comes not quite 3 months after the early March smashing of windows and setting off of firecrackers on Lock Street South, attributed to a group of black-clad, masked anti-gentrification protesters. They held a We Are the Ungovernable sign and were subsequently investigated for possible links to anarchism and anarchist groups, unquote. Thread's comments were fun, quote, there was other graffiti there about loving raccoons that didn't get reported on. It's like they are intentionally misrepresenting our politics or something, unquote, and so on.
U.S. anarchist David Graeber's crusade against the rise of, quote, bullshit jobs, unquote, from mainstream The New Statesman by George Eaton. This article on Graeber and his new book emphasizes that Graeber's suggestion to resolve this issue of meaningless busy work is to promote universal basic income, which is also getting a lot of play these days, with various cities experimenting with it at the moment. Stockton in California, the Dutch city Utrecht, Netherlands Tilburg, and Ontario in Canada. Market-friendly anarchists have promoted this idea as well. Obviously, I get that people not needing to work to survive would be fantastic, but I'm not sure how people being supported by the state works to free people from the state. Maybe there's some important step I'm not getting. Quote, Graeber is sympathetic to the idea of a shorter working week, melancholically recalling John Maynard Keynes's 1930 prophecy of a 15-hour work week by the century's end. But as an anarchist, he is more attracted to a universal basic income, a guaranteed minimum salary for all citizens, to, quote, detach livelihood from work. He explained, UBI is basically about freedom. What would happen if you said to people, I trust you to decide for yourself what you want to contribute to society? What of those who argue the left's true challenge is to create more fulfilling work? UBI would be a profound moral transformation about what people think is valuable, Graeber replied. Now, if you don't think you can do that, why are you on the left at all? Unquote.
Against the Smart City, from Nightfall No. 11, an agitational online magazine? It doesn't say much more what it's about in any clickable way, but this PDF-able magazine has articles about resisting the technologies that increasingly surround us, somewhat reminiscent of an Avalanche article a couple months ago, about mental health and what it looks like to support each other in better ways, and about, quote, making May Day every day, unquote, on spreading the fun.
Letter from Cedar on conspiracy charges, the Barton jail, and solidarity, from North Shore Counter Info. This letter, written after Cedar got out of prison, is interesting for a few things, including, significantly, remarks on the blatancy with which the courts make up laws to target specific populations, and the case of people who die in prison because they're in prison. Quote, the physical cause of death might be a drug overdose, but we can't focus simply on the presence of drugs and ignore that three people are locked in cages built for one, stripped of their dignity and any sense of safety. How can we separate drugs from despair and trauma, from the fact that in order to attend court, we are repeatedly sexually assaulted by guards? They call them strip searches. And the answer the guards give to these deaths is to demand more power over prisoners' bodies. So now, in addition to two strip searches and a pat-down, we also get our pelvises x-rayed and are subjected to a range of other body scanners. Unquote.
Anarchism and revolutionary strategy, insurrectionary councilism, from its going down. Okay, I get that people want to see whatever is happening now, whenever now is, as a unique opportunity to bring about the change they want. And I get that we can only work with the languages we speak. In this case, convoluted reasons about why this kind of organization will bring about, quote, mass revolutionary struggle in America, unquote. These essays always end up being more cheerleading than anything else, and 90% of the time, alert, alert, bullshit percentage pulled out of my ass. The problem is identified as people not getting along with each other enough. Maybe this person is just starting out with the theorizing. Maybe IGD is their teething gadget, and as their jaw gets stronger and their experience deepens, we'll see something that more accurately reflects the depths of what we're dealing with. But the odds are against it, unfortunately. Quote, anarchists are facing a historic opportunity. We are witnessing an unprecedented outpouring of resistance in America, building on long-standing radical struggles. And in recent decades, anarchist ideas and practices have played an essential role in organizing radical resistance, from consensus-based decision-making to affinity groups, horizontal assemblies, and emphasis on decentralized direct action. This influence was obvious in the global justice movement, in Occupy and in Antifa coalitions today. Moreover, Trump's brand of state fascism has sparked a crisis with the ruling class itself. It hasn't fully established itself inside the state. All of this means anarchists are poised to play a powerful role in helping to organize in a radical challenge to fascism to rise and the oppressive society that requires fascism to function. The radical struggle is deeply fractured and reactive. Unquote.
Police raid anarchist library in Berlin's Kreuzberg neighborhood. From Hyperallergic, which is, quote, a forum for playful, serious, and radical perspectives on art and culture in the world today, unquote. This article is on police raids and arrests, including arrests of, quote, two men, aged 24 and 27, on suspicion of spreading slander in connection to the wanted signs that were posted around Kreuzberg in December of last year, following the violence at the G20 summit in Hamburg. The posters in question depict several members of the Hamburg police and local politicians who were accused in the renegade poster of forming, quote, a terrorist group for the purpose of attempted manslaughter, serious injury, mistreatment, and kidnapping, unquote. The library remains open despite the raid.
Bullets of McKinley from CrimeThink. A disappointing essay on Leon Czolgosz's assassination of McKinley that attempts to walk some kind of cutesy line between, yeah, we don't care if bad people get hurt, and we would never hurt anyone. There's good commentary on this thread, including a couple that appropriately call out this piece for being consistent with what makes social anarchists not much different from normal liberals. Trying to appeal to masses of folks just makes you sound like everyone else. CrimeThink would have done better to just reprint the piece Volturine Declare wrote on the first anniversary of McKinley's death, signed a sincere appreciator of Czolgosz.
Free Radical Radio Audiobooks, A Funny Thought on a New Way to Play, 33 minutes. Free Radical Radio's Dirt Roll reads an essay by Alejandro de Acosta that suggests, among other things, expanding the concept of the situationist derive to mix up our interactions throughout our day, to experience our activities and thus ourselves in different ways.
Episode 153, Bullshit Jobs with David Graeber, an hour and 10 minutes, from Seriously Wrong, quote, a podcast about prescriptivism and words, exploring alleged contradictions, creative reinterpretation, changing and challenging ourselves in the world, and exciting strategic paradigms for mental toolkits, unquote. I'm digging this first listen to this podcast. It's charming to listen to a project that gets being wrong out of the way immediately. It starts with two dudes talking about the topic of this episode, which is scattered with funny sketches illustrating one point or another. Graeber is doing the speaking everywhere about a new product tour, about a topic that is hardly surprising to anyone who has thought about jobs for a minute, although it is perhaps mildly surprising that it's the people in the jobs who are labeling them as bullshit. The interviewer asks decent questions, and Graeber is usually not terrible to listen to, regardless of some of his odd interpretations of data. I'll be checking out this podcast some more. This podcast is especially recommended for anyone who's tired of edge speak and likes to drive during podcasts.
This is America Number One, an anarchist headline news podcast from It's Going Down, 16 minutes. Another fascinating branding move by the It's Going Down crew with the stated goal of, quote, pushing both ourselves and our movement in terms of generating media. We see the need to work towards the day when we can compete and ultimately leave in the dust both the progressive left, exemplified by Democracy Now!, and the far right, a la InfoWars, unquote. While IGD's efforts to create its own media are obviously worthwhile, they're mislabeling most of their efforts as anarchist aids, some would say was part of founding, people's current confusion between anti-fascism and anarchism. This episode quotes HuffPost, references Trump multiple times, and spends the bulk of its time talking about fascist activity, and ends with an upbeat activism segment, including what they call a win for the Teamsters. How is this not leftist exactly? Not a rhetorical question.
Anarchy Radio, June 1st, 2018. An hour. John is back from a trip to Hamilton, Ontario, where he didn't hang out with any anarchists, but he did get a lot of camera time in an upcoming film about the Unabomber for Netflix. Fame awaits. In these times, call space the final socialist frontier. The left is so oblivious, haha. Black Seed 6 is out, and even though he hasn't seen it, the theme of it, as he understands it, is ambiguity, which of course means most postmodern, because all things Aragorn mean postmodern. He then gives us incomparably better his new piece, The Case Against Philosophy, which is confused and rambly and uses an awful lot of philosophers to make his point. It's hot, the rivers are drying up, drought is a problem everywhere, soil pollution, no nutrients in food, it's all terrible, all again. If only someone, anyone, had the nerve to speak up about or against anything John has to say.
Topic of the week, deciphering criticism. One of my arguments for anonymous commenting is the tendency of people to avoid giving honest feedback unless they can do it without negative social consequences. Okay, that's my guess about why people don't want to say negative things to their friends, but maybe there are other things going on instead or in addition. Moving on. As someone who really appreciates feedback about what I could be doing differently and or better, I want to provide people with ways to get me that information. That's not the only positive thing about commenting anonymously, but I think it's the most significant one, and it's the one I want to talk about here. There is a difference between getting feedback from people we know and from people we don't. It's possible to take seriously anonymous feedback, but it's definitely more challenging. and it gets harder and harder the more it's surrounded by anonymous criticism that is repetitive and thoughtless, as is the vast majority of anonymous criticism. So there's a variety of questions I'd like people to speak to here. How do you determine whether to take criticism seriously? How is it different for you when the criticizer is a known known versus anonymous? What do you intend when you post something negative that you've said all anonymous are the same a dozen or more times before? When is it better to be anonymous, to name yourself, or to take a fake but consistent other name? What makes criticism valuable or stupid? As someone connected to projects that get criticized a lot, how often should I try to explain something that's been explained many times in the past, i.e. where is the responsibility of the criticizer versus the criticized to get the information in contention? Ariel?
Okay. So first of all, we have to start with the fact that people don't know how to give criticism. Your friends, your colleagues, whether it's in person, whether it's on the internet, whether it's anonymous or whether it's not anonymous. We are not trained in this. We are not schooled in this. We equate our opinion of the bad thing you did with criticism, which it's not.
Yes, I agree.
I, in another life, aspired to be some kind of amateur chef-like person, unschooled, whatever. And the people around me who I cooked for the most, as you know, I had to train in how to talk about the things that I made for them, because mostly what you get is, oh, it's good, I like it, and that's not useful. And I find that this applies generally to the way that people talk about the things that they engage with in the world. So that having been said, we'll set that aside. I don't do things on the internet in a manner where they would be criticized. I've received criticism for things I've said on this show, which I fully intended to ignore until you threw it at me unexpectedly. I think anonymous criticism is lazy. Now, I don't think that that means that you have to put your name and your address on what it is that you want to say, but I think that in this world of I can be whoever the fuck I want on the internet, you need to pick a pseudonym and own it, and then be consistent about it. Because you're just letters on a screen, and whoever it is that's doing what they're doing has put a piece of themselves in the world. And to stand in the darkness and lob fruit, you know, rotten fruit or whatever the metaphor you want is, at that, I think is weak. And I think it's a little chicken shit. And the world is full of anonymous. And so if I actually want to take you seriously and want to engage with what you're saying, I'd like to be able to do that. And I can't if you're just an anonymous poster. And the internet, I don't think, is a place most of the time for considered thought and engagement. And most people's comments and criticisms reflect that. So, yeah, that's where I start. I like criticism. I surround myself with people who give me shit so that I get criticism and I want it to be useful. And in general, I don't think anonymous criticism on the internet is.
Well, you know, clearly. So, yeah, I mean, it's hard to know where to begin here, because on the one hand, I can talk about the history of Anarchist News and the decisions that I made around anonymous comments. But I think that actually maybe a good place to turn the clock a lot forward and to talk about why IGD and other kinds of anarchists have made the decisions that they've made around anonymous comments, because I think that that's actually the closest thing I've ever received to a criticism. Like, obviously, there's lots of anonymous commenters who hate on e-news and hate on the comments.
Sure, it's a hobby.
But almost nobody has made the criticism in a meaningful and deep way, other than by the direct action, we'll say, of both CrimeThink and IGD. In the case of CrimeThink, they purposely disincentivize people from commenting on their stories. I'm not sure if they still have comments, but
for years and years and years, one or two people would comment, and any comment that I would see before a moderator would see them, I would frequently see them remove comments that basically, like, asked hard questions.
Sure.
And then, of course, you know, IGD sort of infamously has removed the option to comment at all.
Right, at all.
And so for me, the point isn't that I would say at this point, I feel that the point isn't that anonymous comments are fantastic. I am not sure how much I enjoy them anymore. But the alternative is worse.
Absolutely.
And so in this context, you know, just to speak specifically about I absolutely understand why the anarchists that are engaging with the alt-right and white power people as their pastime are concerned about doxing. Absolutely, I get it. I get why self-defense would be a high priority. I also get, if you think that your anarchism is paramilitary, that you're in fact engaging in direct war against the state and capital, that you perhaps should not be talking about your war online.
Yeah.
So, but I would like to calibrate both of those phenomena with the world that I live in, which, you know, perhaps is not a world filled with as much turmoil as a lot of younger anarchists' lives are. You know, perhaps I've picked a set of people and I'm sticking with them on some level. But I want to calibrate that with what is information versus what is, like, is anarchism about the discussion, or is anarchism about achievable goals and a set of tactics and thought processes that I would call politics? Because to me, to not basically open up the arena to a wild and free-ranging conversation, i.e. a discussion, is to pretend as if there's a secret cabal that in fact are the people who should be invited to the conversation, that all anarchist activity should be local activity having to do with face-to-face relationships. And so here's where it gets problematic for me. I'm like, my best faith reading of those two different projects' approach to anonymous comments basically, I think, has resulted in a very diminished anarchism. That basically people who identify with the tendencies that those two projects point to are basically shrinking the field of what anarchism is. And especially to the extent to which they've basically put a fatwa onto anarchist news and too wild, free-ranging conversation. I feel like anarchism in North America has been greatly diminished by the conclusions of this question, which are really hard. You know, it's a hard thing because I agree that anonymous commenters are shitty on the one hand, and by and large don't produce good criticism and blah, 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 blah. But I think that the diminishment that's been seen over the past couple of years, I feel like it's worse.
But I think what you're actually saying is that while anonymous commenters don't produce good criticism, anonymous commenters can be provocative and provoke a conversation.
And more pointedly, like, other than outside the criticism, anonymous commenters provide the information by which we can make judgments about projects and about activities and all the rest. And if we don't have that information, because basically most people are afraid, or I'm not in the cool crew,
sure,
that's sharing that information, that's bad.
No, I just want to be clear about the distinction here, because, sure, you know, I started off directly addressing the question about criticism. Yeah. And that lives in its own box, and that's a different thing. I think you should be whoever the hell you want to be when you want to talk on the internet, and if that's nobody, or if that's somebody, or if that's a fake somebody. And I love that. If you spend enough time reading the comments on A-News, you can track the you can start to track,
sure, sure,
people, or people will take on a persona, or will take four personas on in a particular post in the comments, and I think all of that, I think there's a lot of garbage. I think there's a lot of signal to noise issues there that you have to weed through if you're looking for something in particular.
Of course.
But in terms of it just being what the field should look like, I think that's where we start. Absolutely. If you were trying to talk to me and point at me and say, you and this thing you did and how it's fucked, I'm gonna take it less seriously though.
Sure. But I guess the point the writer is trying to make is that they would like the anonymousness to free criticism. But I think that, you know, if a Joda has taught us anything, and, you know, whatever other criticism I might have of a Joda, it was a place where good criticism happened. There was a dabble of snark and blah, blah, blah.
but just a dabble.
I guess the point to me is that named authors, known authors, authors you had relationships with, gave very good criticism in the context of Anarchy Magazine.
Sure.
And
some interesting things came out of the letters section.
Yeah, for sure. Which had a very much a free speech veneer to it. But but we don't live in those times anymore. And I think that what has happened, especially in the anarchist space, is factionalism rather than addressing criticism. And I just want to say, as a sort of final point, you know, from my perspective, I have read every shitty anonymous criticism of me and Mold, all of it. I've taken on anon's criticisms of me to a far greater extent than they've been worth.
Yep.
And I think that other people have too. You know, I've received phone calls from, you know, minor celebrity anarchist people who have really who have thrashed about a great deal when they've been criticized online.
Yeah.
And I think that some of that has actually been useful. Again, I'll say that Anarchy Magazine, I think, has been more effective at making criticisms and perhaps creating factionalism. But I think that it's worth saying that, you know, speaking for myself, I read every criticism. I take it very seriously.
Yeah. More seriously than you should, for sure. I mean, there's a part of this question that I don't think is as relevant as the author wants to make it, in that I think it is rare that people outside of Facebook, you know, outside of those places where you have to sign in and create an account, that people are consistently a presence on the internet. You know, people like Emil who pick a name and stick with it and are that person for years. Right, you know, we have those. And again, I'm sure their name isn't actually Emil, but that doesn't matter. They are this persona. I think that's rare. I think that most people, all of their engagement is anonymous, especially in the anarchist world, for all the reasons that you've already cited, is as anonymous as possible. So I actually don't think that that's the magic key to finding freeing yourself into better or more honest criticism or whatever the terms are that the author of the question uses. And I don't know that I know what it is, but I think there's another piece missing. And maybe the anonymous is too much. Maybe the other piece missing is context or community or relationships or... yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think a lot of public projects that have been criticized a lot, I think that their answer to this question is to do your thing and basically ignore the criticism.
Sure.
And that is because most criticism is shitty criticism. It's just people's opinions rather than anything more substantial.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.